4:30. It's time to call the order of the town of Scary Bay's Finance Committee meeting. Can I get roll call, please?
Roll call has been taken unless there are all members are present.
Thank you. This is an opportunity for public comments. If there's any members of the public that wishes to address the board on any item that's not on the agenda, please feel free to state your name and we'll be given 3 minutes. Is there any members out there?
What's happening? Where's my... There we go.
Hearing none, I'm going to close public comments.
Wait a minute, you're not the chair.
And I'm going to turn this over to the chair.
What are you doing? Just relax, will you?
Yeah.
Take a breath. How you doing, bud?
Good, bud.
Sorry I'm late. Got the kids to take care of today. Okay, so we've closed public comment. It's time to review the minutes.
Make a motion to approve.
And I second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Minutes have been approved. Thank you. Presentation. I didn't know we were going to have a presenter here today. I'm sorry about the activity level. Presentation from BAC Community Bank.
Yes, we have Executive Vice President Paul Haley to talk to us about our membership at BAC Bank and how we will collateralize our money when we move things from the county treasurer to BAC Bank. So welcome.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me. And what I've done this evening is put together a quick presentation about the bank and how exactly your funds from the fund discovery day are safe and fully collateralized. So bear with me as I go through this. A little bit about the bank. We're a state chartered bank. We started in 1965, actually out of Brentwood. Today it's 56 years old. It's a privately owned bank by the Bavarian family. And Ron's father, Art, started it. Ron is second generation, and I'm proud to say his son now has joined the bank on our board, and we have third generation. We are about an $800 million bank. We have branches in the three counties, San Joaquin, Stanislaus. We have one branch in the Modesto area, and we're out here in Contra Costa. Our footprint starts in Contra Costa. Here in Discovery Bay, we go all the way to, Concord. And so we have two offices in Brentwood, one in Oakley, and one in Amy. We've been rated by some of the independent firms that look at banks. They look at our financials that are online called the UBIPA report. Every bank has it. They're looked at. Every federally chartered bank has to report in on quarterly. It's called call reports. And so that's where that information is derived from. And so the one that we're really proud of is the five-star Superior Bank by Bauer Financial, who's very well recognized. And obviously, they see us as a very strong and safe bank. So let's talk about the deposits that you currently have with BAC and any future deposits and what we do for not just the town of Discovery Bay but any municipality. By law, all federally insured banks must collateralize the deposits with their assets. So what we do for the town of Discovery Bay as well as our other municipal depositors, we get a letter of credit from the Federal Home Loan Bank at 105% of the commitment amount of the deposits. So how that works is the Federal Home Loan Bank comes into our bank, audits our bank, and they collateralize their letter of credit with some of our loans. So they go through the loan portfolio, they make a pool of loans, and then they issue this letter of credit. So how the letter of credit works, the arrangement is it takes the bank out as an intermediary. And basically, if anything ever happened, the town of Discovery Bay would call on that letter of credit or any municipality that we have, and their deposits would be paid for. So it's completely safe. And it's backed by the government. I mean, Federal Home Loan Bank is a government agency. And so this is a great arrangement for us as well as our municipal deposits. I will kind of give you a list of some of our other municipal deposits, which is not proprietary since everyone is publicly reports. We have a reclamation district 799, Stockton Port Authority, Eastern Contra Costa Transit Authority, Bethel Island Municipal District, Iron House Sanitation District, State of California District, County of San Joaquin. And we have some others, I just didn't list all of them, but some of the ones you might know. been with us for a long time. And so, just like any other commercial bank, we offer an array of services, just like the other banks. Right now, the bank's in very good financial shape. We did kind of a self-promotion thing is we did about 500 PPP loans during the process. We actually have a reputation. We bank a lot of restaurants. And so we did about 50 of those loans for restaurants. We also did something, too, that I'm kind of proud of. We made a corporate decision. Every Friday during the COVID, we just stopped it about a month ago. When it hit, we had skeleton crews in the bank with people at home. We kept the branches open. So every Friday, we had lunch brought in from one of our customers that was a restaurant throughout our whole system. So we felt we needed to support our customer base. And certainly, it was one of those goodwill things as well. As the customers liked it, the employees liked it, and it kind of kept morale up a little bit. So that's a little bit about how we operate as a bank. We're there for people. We enjoy it. We've been in our communities, and we continue to want to focus on that.
Well, any Friday you want, we'll bring you a sample jar from our ox ditch. If just kidding, sir.
That's good. Well, I know I talked a little bit today. Is there any questions on how we're going to approach the deposits, how your relationship is now with the bank? Any concerns, comments?
Just out of curiosity,
sure.
With regards to that line of credit that you established with the federal bank, so if you had to draw on that, or if we had to draw on that because of something happened, would there be an interest charged into us on that, or how?
It's not a loan. It's a letter of credit. So it's a little different. The letter of credit is like a promissory document. If it's drawn upon, instead of coming to the bank, you'll go right to the federal bank,
And they'll make us whole.
They make us whole.
Okay.
Because now what happens in this arrangement is the Federal Home Loan Bank goes after the bank. We have to pay them.
Right.
So you basically, by issuing the letter of credit, takes us out of the equation completely.
I got you. Okay. Understood. You have any questions, Brian?
I don't.
I just want to say that we've been with you as long as I've been on the board, and much longer than that. I think we established the district with your bank. I was the finance elder over at the Presbyterian Church, and we've been using you there from that establishment. I don't know if they still are, but they were when I was over there, and we've always had a great relationship with you guys. You've been very accommodating. You've helped out when we've had board changeovers as best as you can for all the things that have to be done. And so, personally, I'm pleased to continue the relationship.
Well, thank you. We're very happy to be in this community. It's been a good community for the bank. We expect it to continue to grow. We like to support it. And one thing that I enjoy with being at BAC is the amount of money that we give in charities and things like that to our local agencies, and that's what's kind of fun about being a smaller bank. We have a lot of flexibility, and it's just like what I told you about our Fridays on buying that
sure.
decision. We just, that wasn't about a cost, that was more about morale for not just the employees, but also, you know, helping our customers. We just, it was devastating to watch some of these restaurants close down. And I know that I came here one day for lunch to meet somebody from Brentwood. And we went to the sports bar, the steakhouse, right? We'd eat outside, you know. That just showed you. I talked to those folks, and they said, hey, we're hanging in there. But you could sense the pain on people, you know.
So a little bit about yourself. How long have you been with the bank?
I've been with the bank for 10 years.
Okay.
And prior to that, I was with another community bank for 15 years. So mainly my whole world's been community banking. My role at the bank, I'm the chief lending officer. I see over all the existing loan portfolio clients, and now move more into the deposit piece also, kind of the entire relationship.
Fantastic.
I'm one of the five executives. You will like to know that we're actually, three females and two males. And we just hired a male, so it was 3-on-1 for a little tough on me. But I got some backup, but we're still getting outgunned. All kidding aside, very progressive bank. We have a great owner. And again, we just thank you for the opportunity of banking with us, too. It's really a privilege. So thank you.
Who's Is that all we have for presentation for him? Do you have a card you can leave with us,
buddy?
Chance? It would be helpful.
Sure.
And I just want to also convey that, you know, we have an we play an intricate role in the community here based on the fact that when they turn on their tap, they expect water to come out, and when they flush their toilet, they expect it to leave. And we like having a relationship in a small community situation, and we do appreciate your support of the community also, because that's kind of what we're about. So it's much better than dealing with some large building in San Francisco.
It's true. You know what? When someone can pick up the phone and have an issue and you get it resolved, that's the bonus.
I did that today. I called your branch over a personal issue and got somebody very nice on the phone. I haven't talked to your bank in 10 years, but I had a situation where I had to talk to somebody about an old account.
Wonderful.
And I had a good experience, so thank you. Good timing for you to be here today.
Thank you. Usually I hear it the other way around when something doesn't go as well, but I appreciate that.
Well, she could have told me that account was still open and there was still a few $1,000 in it, but instead it was closed as I thought it was. So
I'm sorry.
They didn't find any money for me, but I found an old book in a safe, and I went, wait a minute, is there money in this account? Sir, thank you very much for coming.
Thanks, Paul.
Taking
appreciate
your time.
It.
Anything, I'm sorry, Brian, anything else from you?
No.
Okay, we're good. All right.
I volunteer in the Lions Club as well. We have an account with you guys, and we're also very happy. So.
Well, thank you. This has made me feel great.
So, thank you. Thank you for coming by, sir. Who do we have next for finance update? Well, I imagine that that he's very pleased with that. That's a fairly substantial deposit into a small bank like that. So,
yes.
Thank you for doing that. I appreciate that. It's always good to have some sort of a contact person and a personal relationship developing, especially between staff and the bank. So, thank you for that.
I wanted to give you just a couple updates. Okay, we talked about moving the treasury. We're getting towards the end. I'm going to be working tonight. We have a resolution coming to the committee and to the board for opening up a bank account for Zone 9. And then the final resolution will be that's not ready tonight. It has to go through legal, and I'm working with the county, and I'll be working with Annie this next week to get it written. Will be to actually appoint a treasurer, which we are recommending that we appoint the GM as the treasurer, and that we transfer the funds to local control, and we become a settling agency. Now, unfortunately, we don't have that resolution tonight because working with the county, it's moving kind of slow. I'm asking the committee if it's okay once we get that resolution done that I just bring it directly to the board and not come to the committee first, because that would be in November or December, and if that's okay.
Fine.
Yeah, I'm going to that.
So just so we're clear, though, that's kind of is that kind of the last step to getting us to where we need to go?
Pretty much. Once the resolution is complete and when it's approved by the board, it'll go to the Board of Supervisors on their consent calendar. And once it's approved on their consent calendar, it's just a matter of scheduling a day where they say, okay, we're going to stop cutting checks and you're going to cut your own checks. So it's getting close.
Have we already established an account over at BAC for this? Or are we going to use the existing accounts?
Yeah, we currently have an account for water and wastewater, and we have an account for Zone 8. The only account we need to open, which I have a resolution, is Zone 9.
Hence, you're saying that earlier, and I was, and it dawned on me, why only Zone 9? But now I understand why. I have absolutely no problem with you It's just a matter of putting the wording together so everybody's happy with it, getting legal to sign off on it, getting the county to sign off on it. You've informed the committee that, that this is your intent. I don't have any problem with it going directly to the board.
Great.
With the recommendation of the committee.
All right. At this point, though, are you getting any kind of pushback from the county, or are they, nope, you guys can do what you want to do? And
and they're very indifferent about it, yeah. And they, I've asked for assistance, you know, what do you need in the resolution so you can do this? You know, they can't even find a resolution that was done. Mm.
So the interesting thing is that to us, when you say $17 to $19 million in the bank that we're going to have control of, because our, you know, we talk about $6 to $8 million budgets and that type of thing, that when we, that to us that's a big number. To the county, it's pennies because of the budget that they deal with, which is hundreds of, am I correct, Mike? Hundreds of millions of dollars. $17 million doesn't even put a bump in their interest. So I wouldn't see that they would have any issues. I mean, they could have. Obviously, we're glad they don't. But it really is a small portion of what they deal with. And it's just one less headache for whoever their accounting team is, probably.
Yeah, it is. And they're going to be going through a system conversion. They're working on it right now. So they've got a lot of things on their plate.
Has there been any involvement by district? What are we, district? What district are we out here? 1, 10, 9, 3, 5?
District 3.
District 3, has there been any cooperation or help or reaching out from District 3's supervisor or office to help us with this, or has it been pretty much you on your own?
I did have an email with Leah, and she directed me that once the resolution is approved, that the auditor controller will take it to the Board of Supervisors. She says if that doesn't happen, she will get it pushed through, so.
Yeah, we do want that to just sit on the consent calendar because the rest of the supervisors don't care.
Yeah.
It'd only be Supervisor Burgess that would have any input. Okay, thank you.
All right, so then a couple more topics real quick just to give you an update. The bonding for the D-Night project and Well 8. We have, as previously stated, we met with the underwriters that we've used before, Brandon C. Paulman. Dina and I had a meeting with them, and we are currently, we need to hire two separate professionals to look out for the town's interests. The first are the municipal advisors. They're the ones that are going to help us through the process, and they're going to look out for the town. And then a bond council. Dina and I have interviewed the municipal advisors, and we're asking for quotes and plan to give a recommendation. And we'll be meeting with the bond council tomorrow. And again, have a recommendation.
Question?
Mm-hmm.
We've used bond counsel before. Is this somebody new, or are we going out?
We've used both of these types of consultants in the past. These will be new consultants.
Okay.
And where they're coming from recommendations from our underwriters.
Okay.
We're still determining the bond amounts. Dina and I have been working on those, and we should have a up number in the upcoming months. As previously stated, we're trying to get everything together to be able to pull the trigger. And the matter of us pulling the trigger on the bonds will be the decision of the board.
I'm sorry to keep interrupting you.
That's okay.
And I might be, it's been a hectic 60 days for me, so I might just be a little behind, and this may have already been addressed, but when we originally talked about funding for those projects, we talked about having options other than just a bond. We were talking about maybe getting a loan, or there's some other things we're looking at. All those options have been looked at and exhausted, and it's definitely going to have to come from another bond. Is that correct?
We have not looked at those other options for this project. It was pretty much that we were going to bond was going to be the option because of the term of this.
What am I confused with?
I think you were maybe the financing for if we got the Clipper Drive grant. We did say we were going to exhaust that.
We originally said that we were going to look at multiple options and determine what was the best financing alternative. We started to shift towards the bond because we had an opportunity to sweep older bonds into
a lower interest rate.
A lower interest
okay.
rate. And so that's why we began to focus
okay.
more attention on it.
Understood. I just wanted to make sure that I was up to speed and track it. Okay.
And you know, we will kick that tire, lose a little jargon here, with our bond underwriters, because they do all sorts of financing, so we will ask them if there's any.
Well, they're our consultants, that's what we pay them for, so they'll give us the best advice they can, and we can go run with it from there.
Yeah.
Did you need any clarification on anything?
I don't. Would you mind if I ask a question on the preceding topic?
I'm sorry?
Darren Mass.
I know.
Would you mind if I ask a question on the preceding topic?
No, go ahead.
I apologize. Going back to the BAC, when we open up an account for $17 million, is that a special type of account, and do we negotiate the interest, and how does all that kind of work?
It's an operating account. It's just a regular operating checking account. We're not investing any funds at this point. We need to get the money moved over, and then once we do that, we will try to see what kind
keep
of
looking
funding
at you. Stop looking at you.
Per our investment policy that we can do, but which is just moving the funds.
Got it. Okay, so
I will be talking to them about banking fees, of course.
But that brings up I'm sorry, I'm going to jump backwards with them here for a minute, because that does bring up an interesting point. Once we get that those monies there, we can manage them better as a district than the county ever did, and maybe there would be some opportunity for some interest bearing accounts that would be short term enough that they would still be liquid or non-penalty liquid accounts that we may be able to at least pick up 1 or 2% interest on. That's a lot of money on $17 million or on $10 million.
Yeah,
and
I've got a contact, and I've talked to the bank. Our representative prior to Paul is just retired, and he put me in contact with a gentleman that does municipal investing, and so I am looking at that. At the county, it wasn't worth the while. We made 1/3%. Probably not going to make much more than that at this bank either, but we won't have to pay all the fees that the county assessed on us using their services.
Just something to keep in mind as you go through the process and leverage that money the best we can, as you will, for fees and stuff. That's a substantial deposit. I don't care what bank you are. That's a fairly. If I went to go deposit $19 million at Bank of America, they'd send me the King Air to go to, fly to play golf in. I guarantee you. So
and some of that money, we will be using some of that money, through D9 and L8 and these other projects. But for the most part, we have to keep reserves, and those reserves are going to stay. So
exactly.
Those reserves make some money.
Good point, Brian. Thank you. And then, so back to?
Bond. Okay. So
Bond.
As we alluded to, the underwriters are working on the calling of the 2012 bond, which is really the refinancing of it. We're running up against a little timing issue because the call date on the bond is September. Okay? And if we refinance before that, we have to pay a little bit higher of an interest rate. So they're going to do some analysis. I'm doing some analysis to see if we can, we're going to be ready to do the bond, but we're going to wait and, get their analysis and see if we can wait and bond in September, or do we have to bond earlier? It'll depend more on the D9 project. The good news is the interest rate is very close. It's not too much.
Throw out a ballpark number of what we're talking about. What numbers are you talking about for interest at this point?
For a bond?
Yeah.
2-3%.
So that's about it. That's at least 3/4% lower than we're paying currently.
We are paying...
3.6...
On the 2012 bond, it's between 4 and 5.
Yeah, okay. But that was great when we signed it up in 2012.
Yes.
That was a great rate because everything else was at 8%.
So we're going to refinance it and, bring it down.
Okay. How many more years do we have to pay on that 2012 bond?
On the 2012 bond, it'll be 20 years when we do the call.
So there should be no balance left. What did we refine?
We're refinancing.
2012 would be 2032. We still have 10 years left on it.
Yeah.
10 or 11 years left on it. That's answering my question. Okay.
I think we have 20 years left on it. It's a 30-year bond.
30-year bond. So we still have 30 years. Okay.
Yeah,
and we're
not going to extend it. We're just
rolling it, which is what we have done, which is what we did the last time on the water meter project. We rolled. But as long as we roll down, I got no problem. It's easy to roll downhill. It's hard to roll uphill.
The last topic that I have on the bond is that we will likely be in need of a special finance meeting in November sometime.
Okay.
We'll know more in the next couple of weeks, and we will work
because timing is of the essence.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we don't want to end up flat-footed.
No.
And just the last one, last thing is the fiscal year 2020-2021 audit. Pre-work is going to start at the end of November, and the auditors will be doing their field work in the office in December.
Great. Does that conclude your report?
That concludes my report.
Well, well done.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Excellent.
Very
Thank
much.
You.
You are really in the middle of a bunch of fun stuff.
Yes.
I don't think she's done yet, though.
You have more.
Yeah, I got more.
That's what the whole presentation is. All discussion items.
Now we'll get into discussion items. So, you already touched on this, but go ahead with item one.
For the record, okay, the Town of Discovery Bay currently does not have a bank account for lighting and landscaping Zone 9 funds. All the funds for Zone 9 are received and dispersed by the Contra Costa County Treasurer. In order to move the financial operations to the town, Zone 9 must have its own bank account. Staff is recommending that you recommend to the board to approve Resolution 2021-14 authorizing the establishment of a bank account for Zone 9 with BAC Bank.
So recommended.
Okay.
Which is interesting that they make us open a separate account. That's got to be a legal thing. That they make us establish an account for each zone, but we can't just open one account and put it in different...
Yeah, because it's restricted funds.
Ledgers.
So what goes in must come out.
Yeah, I guess.
It's restricted.
It's all Prop 218 stuff, right?
Yeah. And we don't have a... There's another way to do it if you had a more sophisticated accounting system. You could have it all in one fund like the county does and keep sub-ledgers of the separate ones, but for our...
I trust your judgment.
For auditing, it's a lot easier.
I trust your judgment. And it's probably for auditing, is that what you said, Mike?
Yeah,
yeah, that's what I would agree.
For auditing.
That's what was going through my head. For auditing, it makes it cut and dried.
Yes, it does.
Item two, overlay district.
Rick, are you on the line?
Yes, ma'am.
So we have Rick Clark with Harrison Associates. He will present to us the overlay district.
Hello, Rick.
Hello, gentlemen. How are we?
We're doing, gentlemen and ladies, and we're doing fine. I apologize for all the shenanigans you had to pay. I didn't know anybody was on the line. There usually isn't, so we run a little bit footloose and fancy free sometimes. What do you got for us?
Oh, that's fine. I think Julie's going to set up an overhead for you. Let me know when that's ready to go, Julie.
It's ready to go.
Okay. All right. As Julie said, my name is Rick Clark. I'm here with Harrison Associates, and we're going to discuss a few things tonight. Julie, that next slide would be a good time to flip over. We're going to talk about an analysis that we were hired to do. It was a few years ago. We did an analysis of your district, existing district, and how we could increase some revenue options for you. We chose an overlay district, which we're going to discuss today, and we'll get into the reasons for choosing the overlay. The procedures we'll need to go through to establish an overlay district and the formation process. Formation process itself is related to a couple of different laws, one of those being Proposition 218, I just heard you or someone else mention. Next slide, please. As I mentioned, Harris was hired in 2018 to conduct analysis of the existing district, your zones, and basically it was in an attempt to establish how you could increase your revenues to eliminate the deficit that exists now. We looked at several options. One of those was just to increase the assessments that are there for Zone 9, Zone 61, 57, those guys. We looked at the option of taking the zones that the county manages now away from them to kind of get rid of the county's overhead costs and those things. We looked at creating a separate zone just for the Zone 8 parcels. And we also looked at creating this overlay zone district, excuse me. Now there were benefits for each one of those, but we discussed those, all of those options with staff while Mike was there, and also with Dina and Julie. And we decided that the overlay district was really the best option for you as things sit. And as I go through this, if you have a question on any of these slides, please stop me, shoot me in the face, whatever. Get me to stop, and I'll see if I can go back and clarify anything we need to as we go, okay?
Sure.
Next slide, please. Right, next slide, Julie. Okay, the reason we chose this overlay zone, first of all, it allows us to increase funding so that you're eliminating that deficit that you have every year. That's basically related to your labor costs and the community center itself. It allows us to use the revenue that's raised throughout the CSD, not only for the community center, but also for the other parks. One of the things it also does is eliminates, I use the term siloed, because the assessments that are generated now for Zone 9, for Zone 61, for Zone 57, 35, they all have to stay within those zones. That's part of the 1972 Act that these were formed under, and it remains siloed. It allows all these dollars have to stay with where they are now for the existing zones. The overlay zone we're creating kind of allows us to use the new revenue that we'll get from the overlay assessments in a more broad area rather than keeping it within specific areas or zones as they exist. So there won't be any zones within the overlay zone district. It will just be a larger district. One of the other advantages is that the revenue that the county collects and that you receive for the other zones will continue. That money doesn't go away. This will be an additional new revenue source for the CSD if the property owners approve it. And another item or piece of this is once this is established as part of the formation of this district and the assessments that we establish, that assessment and the question that will ultimately be posed to the property owners is, do you approve this assessment, this new district, and an annual inflation factor to that assessment? Basically allows that assessment to increase every year, either by CPI or you could do a flat 2%, 3%. There are different ways to do it. As long as it's a clearly defined escalator, we can do that. So that's another advantage to creating a new district here. Next slide, please. Here you just see the map of the CSD as it stands now. There's a couple of areas that we are going to touch on just briefly, I think on the next slide, that are the Pantages development and a Newport Point development that are going in here at different places. And since I can't point and I don't have a pointer, you'll have to either guess where they are or you already do. So
we're very familiar with those areas.
I figured you were, but I'm going to bring those up in just a second here. So next slide, please. And this is where we're getting into some of the meat of what you're going to look at or what we're going to be doing. And although this is, there's a lot of information in here. What we did, and this was the table that was created by Julie, and she did a very nice job on this. It's broken down by the existing zones as they are. So what it's showing you is for Zone 8, the larger table here on the left, is there are 17 parcels that are going to have a zero assessment, proposed anyway at this time, for the new overlay zone. And that's because those are utility parcels, they're streets, they're things that typically don't get assessed anyway. They're not going to touch on all of them, but for the most part, 3,000 of these parcels will see an assessment rate of $146.16. That'll be what we're doing. And if we're doing that by month, we're asking for a little over $12 a month to enhance the revenue for the entire community. So it, different zones, the reason there are different dollar amounts for different parcels here is that one of the things that Proposition 218 requires us to do is to assess properties based on the benefit they receive. And as a, although I'm not the actual assessment engineer, I put these reports together and an engineer approves it, looks at it, reviews it, tells me I'm right on track or I'm way off base, and then they approve it. So in any case, each parcel is looked at kind of individually as the type of parcel it is, whether it's commercial, it's, whether it's a single family home, if it's a park, if it's a multi-family residence, that kind of thing. And each parcel is assigned what we call an equivalent dwelling unit. And it's basically starting with the single family home being the base unit of one. And then each other parcel type is assigned an equivalent unit to in relation to that one. So it, for an example, a commercial property just standard is given, say, 4 EDU per acre. So a small even commercial property of 1 acre would be 4 times that $146.16. Up at the top, you see the 1 EBU equals the $146.16. So a commercial property would see a higher dollar amount. A multifamily residential property, an apartment complex or a fourplex would see a higher dollar amount. A vacant property would see a lower dollar amount. Those kinds of things. And I have that broken down in, on the actual assessment list for each of these that I didn't need to bother you with, but I wanted to try to explain why you're seeing different dollar amounts for different types of parcels. And Zone 8 was the easiest one to kind of go to, you know, because there's such a wide variety of dollars there.
Rick,
Zone 9, you go over to that one.
Rick, can I interrupt real quick? Can you tell me, what does EBU stand for again? I missed that.
That's fine. Equivalent dwelling unit.
It's ED, not EB. That's what I saw that too. You have a typo in there. It says EBU.
It's equivalent benefit.
Oh, okay.
Oh,
well, that's equivalent
benefit
unit.
Okay.
All right.
It's the same thing. It's semantics.
Yeah. Well, I've always heard it as EDU, though. We've always talked about it as being an EDU.
Okay.
Rick, yeah, is this data, though, from 2018, or is this updated data?
It's updated data.
Okay, so
I got new, the dollars that were generated were based on costs that Julie provided me, and I ran that back through. I assigned the different EDUs, EBUs to the parcels, and then ran the dollars back through it, and this is where what we came up with.
All right, so if we're looking at Zone 8, if we're looking at Zone 8, obviously, yeah, there's some commercial properties and some non-single-family home properties. Let's take that out of the equation for a second. So if my understanding is correct, we're looking at about 3,500 single-family homes that will either see $133 or $146 assessment per year.
That is correct, if I remember my Zone 8 parcels correctly.
I'm assuming $675 are the condos.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay,
condo would be typically a little longer.
Those would be the two major units we have, either single family homes. I'm just curious, what parcel would be $1,658?
Commercial.
I'd have to look at it.
Is that the steakhouse probably, or the shopping center?
It would be a large commercial. Yeah, it would be one of those. I'd have to look and see.
Okay, it's not worth the time because we're bumping up against another meeting, so... that's fine.
Yeah.
We won't get too far into the weeds here. Yeah.
Well, I'm just trying to understand though, where the $146 is coming from. Where is that number being generated?
Okay. Basically what happens is I assign the EDUs or EBUs to each of the parcels based on the parcel type, their size, use, all of that. And we take the total dollar amount that we're trying to collect, the reasons, you know, the shortage that you've got. And I run that back based on, so I get a total EBU count. So after I assign the ones for the commercials and the vacant parcels and this, that, and the other, I get a total EBU count, I get the total dollar amount, and I divide that that number come up 146.60.
Got it. That's
where that number
see, what we're not seeing is the column that has EBUs in it.
Right.
So that number, that last one, it's 1938, maybe 8 EBUs.
But my question is, though, how does each zone relate to each other as far as your mathematics is concerned?
As far as the EBUs go and how they are assigned, they don't. This is something you're going to have to realize. This new district, this overlay zone, will have no zones in it. This overlay district will have no zones in it.
Got it. Let me give you an example where I'm coming from here. Hey, Rick. So I currently live in zone 9, and we're paying $750 a year. And if I read your analysis, you want to assess us another $86, which brings us over to $800 a year. How does that relate to zone 8? Zone 57, zone 61, as far as an equal dollar amount or fairness?
Well, again, you're looking at an existing zone and existing assessment and what you're paying and what somebody else is paying. And I'm looking at a new zone, new district, completely.
They're unrelated.
I get that, but there's no fairness then at this point.
You know what fair is? Fair is a place where a pig gets a first place award at the, you know, that's what a fair is.
What more benefit does Zone 8 or Zone 9 have over each other?
Well, here's my question. Why is Zone 9 almost half of what everybody else pays? Why are they only paying $86.14 instead of the $146.16?
No, that's the increase.
No, that's the assessment.
Oh.
Okay, if I might, Rick, this is my... You pay an assessment, all that assessment goes to Zone 9. So when you look at how much benefit that overlay is going to give the residents of Zone 9, it's a reduced benefit because you already pay a full amount in Zone 9. But there's Slifer Park. There's the other things that are part of the overlay that you contribute to because you do derive a benefit driving into your complex with some of the streetscapes and things of that nature. So your benefit is because you pay an assessment in there, you're only looking at it Zone 9, but you have, but the people in Zone 9 will get a benefit from the overlay because that can be any park. It can be used to infuse more money into Zone 9, etc.
Sure, and I understand that. But
weighted EBU, your actual benefit is reduced to that amount.
Right, but potentially, though, I could be paying $800 a year in Zone 9, and someone could be paying $200 a year in Zone 8.
I'm just going to go. I don't want to get too far into this, Brian, because we do this all the time, but you knew that when you bought the property. That was what the assessment was when you purchased your property. You accepted that when you bought it. You accepted those terms and conditions. It can't change at this point. There's not going to be any way to make that fair. That was the way it was when the developer built the property.
I don't argue that. But now we're talking about a new program. And so, in order to sell this program, make it equal for all citizens.
Well, I'm already looking at this. You're already getting it. Why are they paying that much less in Zone 9 than we're paying in Zone 8 for the same benefit? I don't understand that. Rick?
Yeah.
When you look at zone
8 is, I can give you.
Or even in zone 57. Zone 57 pays $146.16 per EBU, which you and in zone 9 they only pay $86.14. Why is that?
Zone 9 has Slifer Park that's right there next to it, and they have a much further. They don't have direct access to the community center.
Okay, that's all I want is an explanation.
Direct access to the community center, all of the landscaping and the parks and the street lighting that goes in along there.
They're already contributing to.
And I can tell you that Zone 8 does not pay a current assessment.
Well,
at all.
Yeah, that's the problem.
Well, we understand that, but again, that was the way the town was developed, and there's not much we can do about that at this point.
Right.
Sam.
I get it.
Yep. Both of you. Sam, down.
No, Kevin, I realized when I bought into there what the deal was. I'm just saying as we move forward, if we're introducing a new program and we want the residents of Discovery Bay to buy into this program, it's going to be real hard for any resident of Zone 9 to go, I don't see the value increasing when I'm already paying the most out of everybody.
It's going to be hard for you to get the other 3,000 parcels to say, I'm going to subsidize Zone 9 because they've already paid so much. Because that's what you're saying. We should subsidize you.
I'm not. I'm saying that I think there's every home should pay the same amount.
It's not going to ever happen.
Or close to it, within a percentage.
That cannot happen.
Thank you, Rick.
Under Proposition 218, that cannot happen. I can't do it.
Oh, well, maybe I don't understand Proposition 218. What?
It's locked in, isn't it?
Proposition 218, I understand the reason for wanting things to be equitable and even, but saying that everybody pays the same dollar amount doesn't fly. It doesn't fly with Proposition 218.
Okay, well, but we'll, within a certain percentage, though, is that authorized?
Rick, are you able to explain
basically, everybody's paying the same assessment rate. That's the fairness. Everybody's paying the same assessment rate, 146.16. The difference being the benefit that you're receiving. And again, I don't want to say it's arbitrary, but it's not a formula either. It's not a straight mathematical formula that I can plug in. So we start with the same assessment rate and try to make the benefit as equitable as possible.
So that attempt was made for Zone 9. It's the lowest EBU there.
Subjectively, yeah.
So that's all they can do.
It's like an appraisal. I'll get three more appraisals. I'll get three different more opinions.
Okay. We can't spend much more time.
You start to look at Zone 8. How much benefit is Zone 9's park, is Ravenswood Park, to the Zone 8 residents? It's a lower benefit than the residents in Zone 9.
I disagree with that. Any resident from Zone 8 can come to Zone 9, and any resident in Zone 9 can come to Zone 8 and enjoy each other's amenities.
So people in Zone 8 don't even know there's a water park in Zone 9. People in the lakes don't even know there's a marina at the marina. So that
anyway, the law says
right.
That if you
thank
have to
you.
Assign a benefit, you have to do it on a variety of factors that can change. In
it can't be arbitrary. That's the
and
point.
So what Rick has done is he's taken that smorgasbord of factors, tried to apply all that he could to come up with a rational basis for assigning a particular benefit value.
The next page explains
some of the assessments.
And we're taking up your time here, Rick, so please move on because your procedures kind of explain a little bit of that, I think.
I'm not in any hurry.
Well, we are because we have another meeting that we're backing up against.
Okay, that's fine. I got it. All right, so I'm available to talk about this other times as well.
Absolutely.
Next slide, we're going to the procedures that we need to go through, and these are governed by Proposition 218. So, in order to, this is a new work increase. In this case, it would be a new assessment. So we need to send out a notice and ballot to all the property owners that would be receiving this new assessment, which is everybody in the CSD. There's certain requirements that ballot notice have to have. It has to give you the assessment amount for that particular property. It has to tell them the total assessment amount that we're trying to collect for the new district. The duration of assessments, in this case, it would be in perpetuity or as long as the property, as long as the CSD provides the services. The reason for the assessments, which is to make up the deficit, the current CSD currently doesn't have enough money to run their services properly. So that's the reason for that, the basis of the calculation. The method of apportionment was kind of what we went through right there, explaining the EDU, and that'll be explained in detail in an engineer's report. We have to have a public hearing. That notice gives you the date and time of that public hearing. And the assessment amounts must be supported by the engineer's report, like I said, would detail that method of spread and how we came up with the dollar. Next slide is the noticing requirements themselves. Again, certain things that have to be included, we give them a notice, a summary of how to fill out the ballot, how it needs to be returned. We have to explain to them or let people know that the existence of a majority protest will stop the process, basically. Majority protest is defined by first of all, we send out 4,000 ballots. If we get 1,000 ballots back, the tabulation is based on those 1,000 ballots, not on everything you send out. It's just on the return ballots. And then it's a 50% majority protest. So there has to be more no's than yeses. And secondly, those no's and yeses are weighted based on their financial obligations, so dollar amounts on those ballots. So an easy way to look at that would be it's kind of like one vote for every dollar of assessment in that case. The ballots have to go out at least 45 days prior to the public hearing. And we just went over what a protest is, how it's defined. Next slide. Reason we have to deal with all the fun of Proposition 218 was adopted by the California voters in 1996. The Right to Vote on Taxes Act is what it was called. If you guys have any need to have some reading material, because you have nothing else to read, you see where the section can be found. You read through that. And basically, this law limited how government agencies can increase assessments. Prior to Proposition 218, it was much easier for a local agency to create or increase assessments, and this kind of limited that that ability. Next slide, please. The assessment ballots themselves, once they're mailed out and they're returned, those ballots have to remain sealed until after the close of the public hearing. So we don't get to see, you don't get to have a preview of how the vote's going to go. They're tabulated only if they've been properly filled out. You see the criteria there. Once the public hearing is closed, and that's basically you guys will hold a public hearing allowing anybody, any of the residents, to address the board, voice their opinion, ask questions, whatever. You would then close the public hearing. We would start to then tabulate the ballots. If there's not a majority protest, then you could adopt a resolution to approve the new district. If there is, it has to be stopped or process abandoned for at least 1 year before you could try it again. Next slide, please. Based on the nice, robust discussion we had a few minutes ago, it would be a really good idea to use some public outreach before we send out any ballots, before we go too far into this. We have used other professionals to help us with this. We could do it ourselves, we being Harris. If you wanted to just send some letters and some informational pieces to property owners to try to get the message out ourselves, we can certainly do that. If you really want some engagement from the community to get their feedback, I would really suggest hiring through us or otherwise another professional firm that we can give you some ideas or just make some suggestions of who you could use. But those companies are very good at garnering feedback from the community and getting you a feel for where what the property owners are thinking before we would send out a ballot. So next slide, please. We don't need to go through this. This kind of goes through some of the other couple of slides, just kind of a flow chart that we have that shows the steps of what has to happen, some of the timing of it. So again, that's something you use more for reference than anything else. And the next slide is just the end, and we can ask more questions or discuss if we need to or have additional time. But at this moment, I'd like to thank you for your time, your attention, and
Rick, we want to thank you for your presentation. Yeah. I think the Finance Committee wants some time to kind of look this over, have some discussions with staff, but we will definitely be getting back to you with what recommendation we're going to be making to the board with regards to how to move forward. I need some historical background on this. I'm not sure. I was not on the Finance Committee when this was initiated, so I have some questions for staff. Yeah. So why don't we go ahead and take care of that. Again, apologize for eating into your time and rushing through to a certain extent, but we are a public agency and we have obligations to other constituents with regards to other meetings. So I'm sure you understand.
I get it.
We may just call a meeting without a lot on the agenda and just have you as our keynote and be able to spend a little more time once we understand a little bit better where we're trying to go. So we, again, appreciate your time and your presentation, and we look forward to working further with Harris and Company and moving forward with a proposal
to take to the town, but all kinds of red flags go before my eyes when I read stuff like this. So we definitely need professionals guiding us along the way.
Yeah.
Thanks, Rick. Appreciate it.
And it's a lot of information.
Thank you, Rick.
Thank you, guys.
Appreciate it.
Have a day.
Bye-bye. Okay, final item, please.
I'll keep it short.
Now I know why you were sitting over there. Okay.
So, in short, we were going to enter into a contract with the Corps for our park maintenance. They, at the last minute, realized they made an error in their calculations in terms of the contract. But we still want to make this agreement work because we feel it's good for the town. We need to be more efficient with our limited resources. We wanted the flexibility to hire a four-man crew instead of just a one-person landscaper. And we wanted to develop a relationship with the Corps so, you know, they provide towns and agencies like us an opportunity to supplement their in-house. So it has to have a sample schedule. In short, the details of the initial contract were for a weekly service. The new contract is for a predetermined 14-week schedule. Determined by the town, we get 2 weeks floater. Reasons for the schedule: we want to get them in here quickly in this fall to get our parks, in terms of our tree shrubs, ground cover up to an acceptable level of maintenance. We'll break from the contract during the dormant season. We'll come back. We'll hit it hard in March and April, and start to cycle back over.
Question: we are the finance committee, so therefore, financially, how did this affect us? Because we were, and they misrepresented, or innocently misrepresented what they thought they could do, and it was much different. So we had, and it was almost too good to be true when we got it. So it kind of, you know what they say about if it's too good to be true. So, but what does this do? What are the benefits financially for us at this point?
So when I look at it, we get four people. Stretch that out, that's 64 weeks, right? For about the same price that we would have a one landscaper for 47, 48 weeks minus.
Still sounds like a good deal.
So it is a good deal.
You've done all the analysis.
It's nice to have an on-call crew, as I call it.
Yeah.
You know, hey, we've got certain things to get done.
And the benefit to them is they're able to train people to do things that they wouldn't normally train, and it's almost like an apprenticeship program, huh?
Exactly.
Okay. With a very qualified supervisor that it handles their crew.
Yes.
You handle the supervisor handles the crew.
Actually, what's really nice is I can also handle the crew. So they have a crew lead that will come to me and ask me, what do you want done with this? I don't have to go around supervisor, foreman.
But you don't have to individually manage their crews.
Correct.
Because we don't have time for you to do that.
Their lead comes to me and says,
okay. That's my concern. Anything from you, Brian, on that?
Only just how do you set the expectations of the level of whatever that, you know, obviously with your own staff, you have certain dimensions you want to, you know, how's that coming together?
So there's a good reason we hired them for some of these little street safe projects. I was able to see the level of service we're getting, and it's more than acceptable in terms of what they're giving us. In terms of, we've hired some other private contractors before in the past, and it's, in my opinion, it exceeds them. So,
well,
Bill, thank you. I'm glad we got it straightened out before we got too far down the road, and we definitely appreciate, again, it's a great idea. It's still a great idea. It's still going to benefit the town. So thank you for coming up with it, and we look forward to seeing some results.
Thank you.
So do we need to make it a recommendation? We recommend that we sign this contract, that the board approve this contract as soon as possible so that we can nip all the fall weather and everything in the bud. No, so to speak.
Yeah.
No pun intended.
He's bringing it back tonight.
Okay.
Very good.
Very good. Very good. I have about a minute. Is there any comment from the public? Are there any future agenda items? Then I would like to just close in thanking my colleague here for getting the meeting started. I was a little late today, so thank you, Brian, for getting it going for us on time. And it was a very packed meeting, but a lot was accomplished. So thank you for all your hard work, staff. Julie, great presentation. Bill, thank you. And the meeting is adjourned.